So the first thing I have to remind you is that all this is from our perspective. This is the way it appears from us. And that's why in Torah Tzod, it always talks about Or Ein Sof and isn't really referring ever to the Ein Sof. Or Ein Sof is how the Ein Sof appears to us. And we have to always remind ourselves that all of this is how it appears to us, based on the kind of brain and intellectual potential we have, okay? But this is the way it appears to us. And therefore, the Arizal started off by saying, in the beginning there was just Or Ein Sof, okay? So we've talked about how God is not in existence, but really Hashem is existence and infinitely more. And that's how the Arizal is basically saying that. In the beginning, there was just Or Ein Sof. And even that is from our perspective. Everything we're going to say is relative to us. And anything that we say is only valid if it's relevant to us. If it's not relevant to us, we shouldn't be talking about this. Okay? So in the beginning, there was just Or Ein Sof. When the Or Ein Sof wanted to create you and me, he withdrew or concealed his light, created a vacuum or a void. In that void, he produced vessels which are the opposite of light. Right? Light expands, vessels contain, light, the light is unlimited, the vessels are limited. And then Hashem projects a thin ray of this endless light into these vessels and they explode because they can't take, the limited can't handle the unlimited. And then everything goes into what's called Shvirat HaKelim, and into a world called Tohu, which means chaos. Now, what's disturbing about what the Arizal is describing is that within the Ein Sof is what? What's disturbing? What? Not just Sof. That's not completely disturbing. What? More than that, the chaos. Whether we just said that within the unlimited is limited, within the unlimited is breakdown, within the unlimited is chaos. Now what's all that A-I-A-I-E imperfection doing within that perfect Or Ein Sof? And then the Arizal says something very disturbing at the end of a much longer description of the cosmology of Judaism, which is although the light surrounds the void, it continues to fill the void, right? And he says a paradoxical statement. So again, all this is from our perspective. All this is how it appears to us. This is the way we could understand it based on the kind of brains that we have. This isn't how it is, but it is how it is for us. And this isn't about God. This is about understanding who we are and what we're here to do and why life is so difficult. Okay? So, Rav Kook, courageously, I have not seen anybody do this. That's why this was just shocking. I had struggled with the Tzimtzum concept for years. And when I encountered this piece of Rav Kook, it was like shocking how clear he actually went on a limb for us, because he revealed secrets that very few writers have revealed in such clarity, okay? And as I mentioned to you, some might think that I shouldn't even be teaching this to you, right? But I am of the opinion that this is a generation that really does and is capable of a more evolved and a more inclusive, more holistic understanding of Judaism. So I hope I'm right. So Rav Kook explains that we understand absolute perfection as having two types of perfection or two types of wholeness. We understand absolute wholeness, having two types of wholeness. And this is, again, from our perspective. One is static, never changing, whole, complete, perfect. But if the absolute perfect couldn't include the possibility for growth, for movement from imperfect to greater perfection, then that would be a limitation, right? Especially since we experience and so value growth, how could we rob the divine of the possibility of participating in growth? So therefore, the Arizal is basically telling us, Rav Kook is translating that, that when we understand absolute perfection, there's two types of perfection: static, never changing, and that correlates to the name Yud Kei Vav Kei. Ani Hashem Lo Shaniti, I am God, I never changed, Pasuk. And then there's a dynamic perfection, which actually correlates more to the name Elohim, which is ever-changing. It's the God who is a creator. It's a God who's created us in his image. It's a God who has given us the title that we too are Elohim in some way. Elohim Atem U'Bnei Elyon Kulchem. You are gods in some way. And what this all basically helps us appreciate is, why are we here? Or what are we doing here? Not really why, but now that we're here, who are we and what are we here to be doing? And what is it all about? And so, you know, when I was a kid, I understood Hashem as a single being floating somewhere in outer space who snapped his fingers for some ludicrous reason and created me, but created a very imperfect me and put me in a very imperfect world, actually gave me a Yetzer Hara, which kind of feels a little unfair. But then later on in yeshiva, I was told that he did this all for my best interest, which I tried to buy that, but I didn't really find that so satisfying, because it doesn't feel like it's so good. No, it's really good. He just wants you to choose the good. And so I had an image of a God who stoically observed me from a distance, not in any way participating or feeling the pain that I am going through in my life, and that somehow he knows better, and I did believe that, and I do believe that, but doesn't seem to participate in any of all this dynamic drama that I'm in. Well, what the Arizal is revealing to us, and Rav Kook is clarifying for us, is that the basic concept of Ein Od Milvado, there is nothing but Hashem, there is nothing but absolute goodness, there is nothing but absolute perfection, but when we understand absolute perfection, then the only way we can formulate it is in a paradoxical way. As Rav Soloveitchik says, the path to paradise is paradox. And the paradox is, while already being and forever being perfect, the absolute perfect can include the possibility of imperfection towards a growth of greater perfection. And therefore, imperfection is now perfect. Explain to me why. How could imperfection now have a quality of perfection? Josh?
We are the imperfect child of the
converse. No, before we talk about us, I'll just talk purely conceptually. How is it that imperfection could be part of perfection? Yeah? Exactly. There's two types of perfection. There's dynamic perfection, and in dynamic perfection, imperfection is an essential part of perfection, right? So you are perfect. If anybody here thinks you're not perfect, you are. You are a perfect journey. You're a perfect process. Your imperfections and your ability and your willingness to struggle with them and be more whole and be more good is the kind of perfection you are. So much so that Rav Kook will later tell us that we are the crowning perfection of God's perfection. It's almost as if God looks up to us, or this aspect of himself, okay? And we'll talk about that later. So now the question is that, so are we ever going to be perfect? What do you think?
We are.
Well, are we or are we not? Well, how many people think we are perfect?
We are a certain type.
We have the ability.
We are a dynamic perfection, because we have imperfections that are capable of growing. But will we ever be perfect, or will we always become perfect? We will always become perfect. That's why this is also called Ein Sof. Because there's a no-end journey to understanding ourselves and our connection to Hashem and the meaning of our lives. Okay? So you're asking a very important question, you all did, but this one especially needs to be addressed. Well, what's this all about? The purpose of life, and listen very carefully, the purpose of life is to live a full life. That's what you're here to do. You're here to live a full life. But the definition of a full life, a true life, is a life that is dedicated to becoming more whole, right? Where you're more complete, you're more holy, you're more whole in your loving, you're more whole in your kindness, you're more whole in your integrity. And that's what it means to be alive. Now, a lot of people don't think that's what it means to be alive. You know, I remember in Israel there was a commercial for Coca-Cola. And the commercial was, the tagline of Coca-Cola in Israel at the time was, Im yesh Coca-Cola, yesh chayim. If you have Coca-Cola, then you are alive, right? And it was a commercial where you had these people playing frisbee on the beach, right? And from out of the ocean comes this handsome He-Man, right? But, you know, six-pack, you know, Coke bottles in his belly, I don't know what. And he comes out of the middle of the sea, and everybody is so impressed. And he comes out of the sea with this ice-cold Coke. And then they get, Joey, let's get a close-up on the bottle of the Coke. So they zoom in on the Coke, and then you got this beautiful little drop. You know, just like goes slithering down the Coke bottle, right? The freezing cold Coke bottle, right? And then this guy takes a gulp. Of course, he makes a bracha. Takes a gulp. And then you have this big sunburst behind him, and you see a silhouette of this guy with a Coke bottle. And then they start singing, if yesh Coca-Cola, yesh chayim. If yesh Coca-Cola, yesh chayim. See, most people think that chayim means that you're running around and you're having a lot of fun. I'm not saying don't have fun. But that's not chayim. You know, I had a friend who was in a terrible car accident and was paralyzed. Couldn't move anymore. And when he was asked, how is he keeping a smile on his face? He said, before this accident, I could walk, but I had no clue where I was going. And before this accident, I could do, but I had no idea what I was doing. But now, because of this accident, I know where I'm going, and I know what I'm doing. Okay? So that's the question is, are you committed to a growth-oriented life? Right, getting trashed is not growth oriented. You know, it's not growth. Not I'm saying that you guys are doing that. I'm just saying that that's a lot of people. A friend of mine who was in Penn said that a lot of students that he met, for them a great day was we partied late, we got drunk, and we slept in, and we skipped classes. He said that's life. That's what it means to be alive. And so this is about ubacharta b'chayim. Choose life. That's the goal of life, is to choose life, but a real life, and a life that is committed to growing, to being more, a better person, a kinder person. That's what it's about. And there's no end to that. Just like love. Love is a journey. It'll never have an end. You will never love your children and say, I did it. I remember when we had our first child, and I loved her so much. Then we had our second child quite quickly, almost 9 months later, right, our second child. And I was very worried because I thought, how am I going to love the second child? I mean, how am I going to divide my love? I mean, now I love my b'chora 100%, my firstborn 100%. What's going to be now? I'm going to love the second one 50%. Now I have to divide. And what happens when we have three children? It'll be 33.333%. And what happens if we end up, Baruch Hashem, having seven children divided into 100%? What do you get? But you know what's amazing about love? It's 100% all the time. You divide it, and it turns into 100. And it never ends. Never ends. This journey never ends. But if you understand that, then you'd be more focused on the moment, right? Rather than being so anxious to get to the future. Right? And I shared this with you, a cute little joke about a fellow goes into a bar, and he sees a sign that says, free beers tomorrow. So he says, well, I'll come tomorrow, why waste my money today? So he comes back the next day, and he says, hey, I'd like to get that free beer. And the bartender says, sir, didn't you read the sign that says, free beers tomorrow? Because tomorrow never, ever comes. Right? The only time you live your life is now. Only now is real. The past is a memory. The future is a speculation. When you get to the future, it'll be now. But are you now? Do you know how to now yourself? Not just know yourself, but now yourself. So what I'm not saying don't grow. No, it's about climbing. It's about climbing, but as I mentioned yesterday, the top of the mountain is not the goal. If it was, why are you wasting your time climbing? Just get into a helicopter. The top of the mountain is the means. The goal is to climb and enjoy that journey. You have been brought to this world for this moment, if you're growing. If you're not growing, then you're losing the purpose of your life here. Right? But if you're trying to make your life better, try and understand yourself, other people, try to put that into practice. And that's what you came here to do. And you're going to feel a very fulfilled life because you're living life the way it's meant to be lived. So you imagine a guy, and you got this like homeless looking guy, and he walks into this beautiful business building in the center of Manhattan. And he goes to the penthouse office. He walks into the office of the CEO of one of the biggest companies in the world, right? And everybody's trying to stop him. Security isn't, where are you going? He said, I know where I'm going. He barges into this office. He puts his feet up on the desk, takes a cigar, and says, hi, Dad. And the father, who's wearing this incredibly expensive, custom-made, tailored suit, with this amazing view, panoramic view of Manhattan, with antique furniture and expensive masterpiece art, looks at his son and says, Joey, you're a bum. Joey, you're a bum. You're going nowhere with your life. Right? Look at me. Look what I have. Right? You're going nowhere. Don't think you're gonna use my credit card anymore. I'm done with the credit card. Right? So Joey smiles and says, Dad, I don't need it. I don't want it. Right? Because to me, life is a fine wine, and I've come to sip every drop of it. And you were never here. You were never now. You weren't with us. You were always saying, then we'll get together, son. Then we'll have a good time then, son. Am I dating myself? Okay. And so, Cat in the Cradle. You don't know that. Okay. Right. It's my Bikitos. I'm sorry. So who's right here? This boy, he just wants to live every moment. He's got no plans. He's got no goal. He's got no top to his mountain. But his father was obsessed with the top and couldn't ever be focused on anything now, because all that mattered and the only time he'd ever be happy is when he got to the top. Which one of these people are right? Neither one of them. So then, what should they be doing? They should get together and have a good time then, right? That's the point, right? You've got to have a top to your mountain. You got to know where you're going. But don't confuse the top with the purpose and be so in a rush to get there, right? And forget to enjoy the journey, right? Because it's about the journey, you know? And that's what is amazing about Shabbat. Shabbat is a day to be. It's more a being day than a becoming day. Right? There is elements of becoming, but it's predominantly a being day. You know, and why is the next world called Olam Haba? So I remember in yeshiva, my Rebbe told me that if I do mitzvahs, I'm going to go to Olam Haba. And you know what? I never felt I could tell him that I didn't want to go to Olam Haba. I really like it here. I don't want to go to Olam Haba. Because to me, Olam Haba is boring. I mean, it sounds like, you know, an old folks home. Like, you know, you made it, and you sit there and just look at the pictures when you were young and dynamic and when there was adventure and risk, right? You want to get out of bed, but they've already handed you the pina colada. You know, there's just nothing to do here. There's no surprise. There's no adventure. There's nothing. There's no growth here. I didn't want to go to Olam Haba. Now, how are you going to tell your Rebbe, I want to go to hell? Right? I mean, how do you say that to your Rebbe? I couldn't. I just didn't know. I didn't know what to do with it. Right? But that's not Olam Haba. Right? Bernard Shaw once said that a living, working definition of hell is an eternal vacation. That hell is a vacation, right? I remember when I was a kid, I saw an episode in the Twilight Zone. Do you guys remember the Twilight Zone? Do you see like reruns? This one is really an amazing one. This one is about this guy who's this gangster. Terrible guy. Malone, right? And Malone just wasted his life, gambled, stealing, right? Lived a life of promiscuity. And he knew that he was going to go to hell if there's an afterlife, but it was worth this life, and he'll take the risk on the next life. Well, he dies. And to his absolute amazement, he finds himself in front of this gorgeous doorway, right? And he can't understand. And next to the doorway is this doorman wearing a beautiful white tuxedo, smiling, warm, radiant kind of guy. And he says, "Welcome, welcome, Malone." And Malone doesn't understand this because this, this is hell. I mean, I thought hell was maybe a broken door or maybe a jail door or, maybe something with an air conditioner over top of it that says eternally broken. I mean, And the guy's so warm and welcoming. He says, "Welcome, we've been waiting for you, Malone." So he flings open the door and he cannot believe his eyes because he sees the most beautiful casino. He's never seen a casino like this in his life. And the lady's there. And they all come and welcome him and escort him to the gambling tables. He's thinking, "What's going on? How could this be hell? I mean, this couldn't be hell. I mean, maybe some other guy with the same name as me, Malone, maybe the guy's switching the names because some poor guy got sent to hell because this is heaven, man. I'm in heaven," right? So they give him the dice, blows on the dice, throws the dice, a winner. "Whoa, this is heaven, man." Give him the dice, blows on the dice, a winner. "Hey, this is really great." Give him the dice, winner. Blows the dice, winner, 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 winner. He says, "I gotta get out of here. I mean, can't you lose in heaven? Can't you ever lose in heaven?" He says, "Listen, guys, excuse me. I'm sorry, but you got the wrong guy. I'm not the guy you think I am. There's been a switch. There's been a mistake." And he starts running for the door. And the guy stops and says, "Where are you going, Malone?" He says, you got the wrong guy. I don't belong here. I don't belong in heaven." And the doorman says, "Malone, welcome to hell." That's hell. You know why it's called Olam Haba? Olam Haba means the world that comes. It never comes. It's always coming. Haba Tamid. Olam Haba Tamid. It's the world that is always coming towards you. You're going to go into a world of constant adventure. There'll be more surprises. We'll have to talk about what the role of free choice will be at that point. But this journey will never end. This journey, it's Ein Sof. You're going to discover so much more all the time. Right? But this world is to make sure that align yourself for the journey. Right? Okay. So what's the difference between Jews and non-Jews? Are we all becomings? And what about the inanimate and the imperfect things that don't seem to be coming? Well, first of all, the world is a stage for becoming. And all the people are players. The question is, do you want to be a player in the play of becoming, of growth and dynamic life? Right? Jews and non-Jews, we're all becomings. We're all becomings. The difference is that we are meant to be the leaders to tell the world to become. So that's the question. What's so chosen about the chosen people? I mean, this is what you do to the chosen people. You think the chosen people would have had an easier life, no? But now you understand. You've been chosen not to have an easy life. you've been chosen to have a growth-filled life. And you know what makes you grow? It's the problems in your life that make you grow. It's the problems in your life that's the fuel for creativity. I remember I met this actor, and you know, he said to me, I'm not telling you you should take this advice, but he said to me that he decided, and his acting teacher told him, don't go to therapy, right? And he said, why? He said, your neurosis is the secret to your creativity. You understand, if you're a well-balanced person, you're probably not going to have that much growth. Because growth comes from challenge. Growth comes from taking risks. Growth comes from confusion. Growth comes from failing. Right? So what's promising about the promised people, or I'm sorry, what's chosen about the chosen people, is that we've been chosen to grow. We've been chosen to be masters of growth. And oh my gosh, we really have. Just looking at my mother, how a woman could come out of the Holocaust and reinvent her life, raise a family, go on. Whoa. Right? You know, now not everybody succeeded, right? It is a game of risk. Right. But remember who's playing that game. Part of Hashem, right? Yeah, Josh.
So that means all these bad rulers and like Hitler, it's justified because it's a test for us.
Well, you know what? I can just tell you Zohar. The Zohar says that what is evil in the world? The Zohar says that the king, son, was always very committed to him. But his commitment was somewhat robot-like. He really never had a challenge to his commitment. So the king hired a prostitute to try and seduce his son.
Isn't that
Eov? What? Isn't that like the story of Eov? Well, let's not go to Eov right now. Just let's stick with this simple metaphor of the Zohar, which is basically the prostitute works for the king. And his job is to challenge the prince so that his desire to come close to the king is not robotic, but is really a choice and really something he earns and something that he can ultimately truly master and be glorified for. Now, interesting enough, what's a prince? A prince is a becoming king, right? So you got the king who is a king, who was a king, already is a king. And then you've got the son, which is an extension of the king, part of the king. The king sees his son as a part of himself. Right, and the prince is the becoming king. So the becoming king is challenged on his journey to be the king. But he never ever, and he doesn't even want to be the king. He wants to forever enjoy getting closer to the king and becoming more like the king. So what's so promising about the promised land? I mean, you know, I would have liked the land that was not flowing with milk and honey. Like, you know, that's great for a kosher dairy restaurant, you know, the milk and honey. But for a country, I'd like the oil next door. Right? Can we have some of that oil? I mean, for a promised land, what's so promising about this land? Do you know what Avram Avinu saw the first time he got to Eretz Israel? He encountered Canaanites who were barbarians, right? Primitive, cruel barbarians. There was a war, political havoc, four kingdoms against five kingdoms, and there was famine. So Hashem says, come, let me show you a land that I will give you and your children. You know, like, that's a pretty surprising thing. I mean, he probably thought he was going to Miami Beach or something. I mean, you know, where did I land? This is the land that you promised to my children, a place that is inhabited with barbarians, political havoc, and economic crisis. Yeah, it's my gift to you, because who you are is God's gift to you, but who you become is your gift to God. And so Hashem sets the stage so you can get that gift. You can give that gift. All right, let's hear some more questions. Any more questions? Did I miss something? Yeah?
Just back to the Jews and non-Jews. If we know about this idea of becoming perfect and we're supposed to grow as people, how are they supposed to know that? Obviously, you said we're the leaders for growth.
They don't have to know. They're watching us. You know, the world is very interested in what happens with the Jewish people. You know, I mentioned to you earlier on the year that Korea sent a group of educators to research why is it that Israel is so advanced in its technology. And if you've read Startup Nation, this is a miraculous nation. And people are looking and people are in awe what we've been able to build. But I want you to understand that the early settlers, the early pioneering Israelis used to sing a song, "We have come to this land to build it and to be built by it." And that's what this is about, being built by the land. So they're watching us. They don't need to know. We don't have to tell them, but they're watching us. We've set a certain model, and that's what we're meant to be. Tzion literally means a model and a statue. And we're supposed to be a model of growth, a model of people who are committed to life. But real life, you know, a full life, a meaningful life, a growth-filled life. But to be alive is to grow. If you're not growing, you're not alive. Not really.
Okay? How do they do that?
Well, they have seven mitzvahs b'nei Noach. They have their own challenges in their lives. Right? Everybody has their challenges in their lives, and that's Hashem's gift to you. Your problems is Hashem's gift, saying, here's where you need to work and where you can make your growth.
Don't they have like a disadvantage? Some of them don't have the guidelines to grow. Or they have the guidelines.
They do have the guidelines. First of all, a lot of the guidelines are intuitive in terms of the moral intuition. Second of all, I think the world knows about us pretty much so. And the ones who don't, and everybody is responsible for their kind of growth, right? It's like, you know, let's say you got a guy, you know, for instance, the story about, you know, there's a story in the Gemara about an executor who's executing the rabbi. And he's torturing to death. And suddenly, you know, he has this moment of tshuva. And he says to the rabbi, if I expedite your death, will I have the portion of the world to come? The rabbi said, yes. And the Gemara says that this, imagine what kind of guy this must be, that his job is to execute and torture people. He actually gets into Olam Haba before the rabbi. But what is that Gemara saying? It's saying that relative to this guy, that was really amazing what he did. Relative to us, that's pretty terrible, that you expedite, you know, death rather than stop it, right? But for this guy, where he's coming from, that was a quantum leap. That was really an incredible demonstration of personal growth and empowerment, spiritual growth, relative to him. So it's really relative, you know. So it's not, don't look at the growth of other people. They're not coming from where you are. They don't have your challenges. And their top to their mountain is not the same as yours. So the best way to mess up your life is to compare your life to everybody else's life. You've got your challenge. You've got your script. You've got your kind of growth to be doing. All right, that's it for today. You can ask me more questions privately.